You are listening to Sunday morning service at Unity of Tustin. Unity of Tustin is a mystical, spiritual community radiating light and love, transforming consciousness. Our mission is healing lives, building dreams, and realizing God. Now, Senior Minister, Reverend Carolyn Mathlin.
Good morning and welcome to Unity. I invite you to close your eyes as we begin with prayer this morning. And taking a deep breath in and settling that collective exhale of like holding something in for a long time and just kind of letting it out, letting it be. Entering fully into the space, feeling the aliveness. And as we feel also the settling of being here now. And there might be something that feels particularly alive for you this morning. Perhaps around healing in your life. Around building a dream, seeing it manifested. Or perhaps a greater experience, a deeper experience of God, an embodiment of that living, loving presence. And so whatever feels most alive for you, we know and we call forward that it is already manifest. And we see evidence of that appearing in your life, under the direction and the guidance of the Holy Spirit. And so, O Holy One, essence of all that is, we do see and know the truth that God is here. Wherever I am, God is here. And all is well. We open to the power of the living reality in the ways that are perfect for us. And so it is. Amen. Having really rich, great conversations with many of you about what it means to surrender and what it, how it looks in our lives, and all of the natural questions that come up, like, well, if I surrender, what, what will my life look like? And, you know, where's discernment in this? Is it just, you know, whatever comes up is, you know, great, and I'm just in the flow of whatever? And so it's been really rich to start to explore, well, what does it really mean? What does it really look like to surrender, to live a life that is not in resistance to what is here, what is actually happening? And interesting that Stedney put some stones in for what is to be, because as Harold was singing, I was reminded of a current surrender experience that I'm in resistance to. And it's fascinating because it's hard to sometimes see how we're in resistance until like it's painful. And this isn't painful, it's just, but I'm the witnessing part, the awareness part is developing as we keep going with this. So I was aware that we're having some computer work done tomorrow. And I have been in resistance from the minute I heard I had to surrender my computer for 24 hours or whatever. Because I have a laundry list of things that I would like to do, and especially since I know that I can't have my computer, this is the time that I absolutely know I would do it if I had my computer. So, anyone ever do that? Like, you know, you're on your way to work and you see people jogging and you're like, I wish I was jogging right now instead of going to work or whatever. You know, whatever isn't happening, that's what you think you should be doing. You know, there's a resistance, this subtle resistance that just kind of becomes a way of relating to life. And I was aware that that was totally in resistance to surrendering my computer. And I'm devising schemes of how I can, you know, work around it and but not from a surrendered place, because here's the shift, here's the catch. There are ways that I can work around. You know, life is clearly presenting a scenario, a situation where I need to surrender my computer for, you know, a little over 24 hours. Instead of wasting my energy being in resistance to that, I could start to look at how will that time look? You know, what do perhaps I need to get off of my computer or work from in a different way? Or do I need to read? Or, you know, but there's a participation with what is available, what is possible, not the resistance of I don't want to give up my computer. Do you feel the shift there? From I'm in opposition to this to this is happening. How can I be on board with it? How can I participate with it? So in anticipation of my joyful surrendering of my computer, when I leave here today, I place a bead in there. I'll let you know if I don't fulfill it. I'll take it out. But I'll trust Sydney to take it out. Sydney is a really good truth teller. I really appreciate that. It keeps me honest. So we all have those moments where we don't realize that we are in resistance until it's happening. We are. But that's been the journey we've been walking, this experiment. So what happens when you have an experiment? The first thing is the original impetus for an experiment is a question, right? So we have been, probably to your annoyance, because I keep bringing it up every week. This is the last week, though, so you can rest assured. But this question, this guiding question that we've been working with from the Surrender Experiment by Michael Singer that he starts his book with, he starts his journey with, is this question, what would happen if we respected the flow of life and used our free will to participate in what's unfolding instead of fighting it? That's a really rich question. And it triggers an immediate response based on your deeply held beliefs. Because your answer to that question, if you believe that this is an unfriendly universe, or that God is not generative and generous and abundant or all-powerful or all-power, is consciousness, is holding the fabric. There's a divine order to everything. If any of those do not hold true for you, if there's a doubt, there's a lack of basic trust that this world is good, inherently good, the answer to this question is going to be really scary. The answer is going to be, what would happen? My life would fall apart. That's what would happen. Can you feel that? And that's the question that we've been in. What if that wasn't true? What if your life doesn't fall apart when you trust God? When you trust that life is conspiring for your good, not for your pain. And stop being in resistance to that. Because that's what surrender is. And I had a wonderful conversation with someone after the service, the first service, about the difference between discernment and just letting things happen. And I said, well, what's your definition of surrender then? So let's review. What is surrender? Surrender isn't about giving in or conforming to outer conditions. So this isn't a, well, you know, my house burned down, so now I'm just going to live on the street. You know, that's apparently what life is providing for me. That's not surrender. That's defeatism. That's That's disowning of spiritual power and who you are as a divine child of God. To say, whatever life throws at me, I'll just take it because I'm a doormat. That is not what we're talking about. That's not been the experiment to see how much of a spiritual doormat you can be. The experiment has been about surrendering our inner resistance, letting go of our inner resistance to outer circumstances, which absolutely means that our personal will, this capacity to direct ourselves, to discern what is mine to do, how is mine to respond, those really generative, fruitful questions become where the work is. Instead of wasting our energy on being in resistance to my computer being taken away. Feel it? So this is the work. This has been the experiment. And so when we have an experiment, the next thing in the scientific model is that you have a hypothesis. After the question comes the hypothesis. So, if we're answering the question, what would happen if we respected the flow of life and used our free will to participate in what was unfolding instead of fighting it? What could a hypothesis be based on that question? This is where you do get to respond. What could be an outcome of that?
That God will care for you.
That God will care for you. And if we internalize that as not an external God, but that we will be cared for, that there is a care, that we generate that, right? We live from that consciousness that there is care. There's care for us. Yeah. What else?
I might be surprised.
I might be surprised. Which, stay tuned. That can go all sorts of ways. Yeah, I might be surprised.
Meaningless persuasion.
Circumvent meaningless persuasion. Yeah. It can also be a sense of like an inner state of peace or freedom, right? Of awakening, of living that enlightened consciousness. If we really are not in resistance to anything and we simply are open to what is arising in the field, present to it, That speaks to a lot of the descriptions of awakening, right? Of living from that consciousness, because there's nothing outside. There's nothing outside God. So the hypothesis then of what would happen is that there's some kind of an awakening, an inner state or a stage even, of a deep peace, of serenity, of an experience of love, or whatever, however that might show up for you, whatever that takeaway might be for you. Really powerful. And so the next part then is literally to test. And that's what we've been doing this whole time, is testing the question. Testing even the embedded, the implicit hypothesis of what it would look like to live from that. And we'll have some time in a little bit to reflect what that has meant for you. What it meant in Michael Singer's life is really a phenomenal story, a fantastic story. And how many of you have finished the book? Great. Okay, so no spoilers for you. If you are not there yet, You're gonna get a little spoiler, because we're on the last section, so we're gonna look at a little bit of what happens in this last chapter. How many of you have you been reading the book? Are like, because he goes from blessing to blessing to blessing, right? At least the ones that he records. There's this sense of like when he surrenders, it's just this fantastic story after fantastic story. And how many of you, when you've done your own experiment, are like, where's my fantastic story? You know. So the other piece of that is, as I was reading this book, I was like, okay, where's the challenge here? You know, I see all this great stuff, but, you know, life is life, and, you know, things happen. Where is his challenge? Where are the challenges showing up? And, you know, just, it's not all like billion-dollar companies. There's something else. Anyone else experience that? Like, what's the other side? That human nature in us is it's like, where's the hard stuff? Well, it shows up at the end, at least at the end of the book, where he talks about all of a sudden being raided by the FBI. Everything he's built, he doesn't use that term. Everything that's been that's arisen, that's been created, comes under seeming attack. And he describes this, and he says, a wave of darkness was falling over everything that had been the source of so much light. It was all completely out of my control. I was determined to sit peacefully deep inside and see if it could pass by without affecting my inner state. It was like the early days when I had first started my experiment of letting go in the face of perceived danger. The big difference now was that the danger was way beyond anything I could have ever imagined. It was the perfect storm. Can you imagine all of a sudden, you know, I was trying to put myself in that experience of being, you know, eventually indicted. 7 years this process took, seven years between the time of the raid to the eventual outcome. I won't spoil it. I'm guessing you can figure it out, but I won't spoil it. With potentially facing 15 years in prison. I mean, this is the stuff in life that people give you a pass on if you want to get, you know, tweaked about. You know, we have that threshold of, okay, that person can go into drama because, you know, it has reached the threshold of, you know, permissible drama. And even that, his intention and how he records the experience of walking through that is the intention to stay surrendered to what life was providing was more important. And because of that time, when everything else, all of the other commitments that he had had, including his prison ministry, you know, they can't have someone who's indicted working with prisoners. So he even had to let that go. His, you know, the things that he had done for many, many, many years, it created the space for these two amazing books. It's interesting, for those of you who have read The Untethered Soul, he wrote The Untethered Soul while this was going on. He wasn't sitting in the forest, you know, oming out. He was in the midst of this experience, this surrender. And he talks about, you know, if you want to learn how to live from this place, you know, read The Untethered Soul, because that was what he was doing. That was what he was doing. So when something is going on in your life, allowing for that center point to still remain true. Another kind of piece that just really affected me and I remember is when he was in the court or approaching the courthouse and the prosecutor was there and he wanted to meet her. And I think the lawyers both, you know, his lawyers both knew him and also were all a little baffled by him, it seems, because he wanted to do some crazy things on occasion in their mind. So, you know, he goes and he introduces himself to the prosecuting attorney. And what's fascinating about that is that there was no, in the way he tells it, there was no intention to feel separate from her. You know, his heart did not close. Even though he was absolutely doing, and this is again where it's not about, okay, I'm indicted, I guess I'm going to jail. That's not, that's the doormat surrender. That's not what this was. He looked at all the evidence, he provided documentation where he needed to, he did his work. He fought what he felt was not true. But he also didn't lose his sense of self in it. And he describes this meeting with the attorney. And he says, you know, hi, I'm Michael Singer, I'm Mickey Singer. And, you know, her reaction to him is like to recoil from him. And he makes the comment that I'm sure in her mind, she's met Michael Singer and she has a terrible story about him. And I probably wouldn't even like him. Because, you know, that sense of we make a story up about someone and then they have to fit into that box, into that reality. And he kept staying open. He did not shut down, even in the face of incredible darkness. And this can become our strategy for enlightenment, our strategy for living from this space. One of the things that Richard Rohr says, and you know, I talked earlier about change, because this was a change, right? We label some changes good and some changes bad, but that even that concept is an absolutely made-up concept in our human mind. What's good and what's bad? There's a neutral fact, and then there's our opinion about the fact. But what is true is that there is always change. Something is always evolving and moving and growing and shifting and whatever. And this experiment is in part about, are we in alignment with that? Are we willing to move with that? The way Richard Rohr talks about it, he says, change is a clear strategy for enlightenment for the world. So next time you're in the middle of a change, or you are in one now, it's a clear strategy for enlightenment. Once you accept ongoing change as a central program for yourself, you tend to continue to grow throughout your life. No matter what, it is an opportunity to stay true, to align, to stay centered in what you hold to be the most true and the most valuable central point of how you show up in the world. He ends the book with really a profound kind of synopsis of his experience. Ooh, I don't know what happened, but peace is on earth. It worked. Our hypothesis worked. He says, people often ask me how I look at things now that I've gone through the life-changing experiences of these past 40 years. I tell them to read The Untethered Soul. How could I possibly explain the great freedom that comes from realizing to the depth of your own being that life knows what it's doing? Take a minute, reflect on something in your life right now. Where? You're pretty sure life does not know what it's doing. And consider that that might be your greatest opportunity to practice this. He says, only direct experience can take you there. At some point, there's no more struggle, just the deep peace that comes from surrendering to a perfection that is beyond your comprehension. Eventually, even the mind stops resisting, and the heart loses the tendency to close. The joy, excitement, and freedom are simply too beautiful to give up. Once you are ready to let go of yourself, life becomes your friend, your teacher, your secret lover. When life's way becomes your way, all the noise stops, and there is a great peace. I love that last sentence. When life's way becomes your way, all the noise stops, and there's great peace. So when you came in today, you got a half sheet of paper that said your surrender experiment. Even if this is your first day here, you can participate in a part of this if you're willing. And as I filled mine out, what I did was I first started with What has happened? You know, we've been in this journey since the beginning of January. If you do not have a half sheet, raise your hand, or if you need a pen, please raise your hand, and we'll get you what you need. Our ushers will gratefully serve you in that way, joyfully serve you. So the first piece is, what has literally happened in January, February, and March? And then, how have you experienced it through the lens of this surrender experiment? What are your ahas? What are the ways that you did release an inner resistance? And what might be the ways that you would like to go deepen into that? What has happened? What's the unfolding story or journey of how life's way has become your way? And so I invite you to close your eyes really briefly and just, before you start writing, reflecting, let's hold the space, the container, for an aha, for a revelation to come, for that witnessing capacity to see and observe what needs to be seen and needs to be observed. And no matter whether you've participated in all of the weeks and the months that this has been going on, or if this is your first exposure to it, what feels alive to you around surrender? And so when you're ready, I invite you to open your eyes and begin writing. And so just take a minute to read what you wrote. I was aware as I reflected on my writing that there was this, I had an idea of what I was going to write, and then I actually started writing. It was interesting what came was I had this vision that I was going to be reveling in the beauty of how much I've surrendered and the joy, you know, that I was feeling and the peace that I was feeling. You know how our mind can make up those stories of, you know, how great it's been? Or how terrible it's been, I guess, depending on where we're at. And as I started writing, it was interesting what came instead was how I want to deepen in my surrender, where I had tricked myself into thinking I had. And the intention, the desire to really let go in some different ways that I hadn't done yet. So it's interesting, whatever comes for you, just allow that to be, you know, kind of your check-in, your ongoing intention. And my invitation would be that you do continue to work your experiment. One of the things that Richard Rohr says is, as long as you remain sincerely open to the ongoing challenges of life and love, you will find God and also yourself. And that really is what we've been working with, finding God and yourself through this willingness to let go and to let God. God bless you.
Unity of Tustin is supported through your generous tithes and love offerings. To support Unity of Tustin online, please click the donate button on our homepage. Thank you for listening.